This morning, we're focusing on a larger-than-life figure, and to do that, we take a step back. Now, when we live committed and focused Torah lives, we are constantly confronting questions, because life is complicated. Life is very complicated. It's complicated internally, and it's complicated as we interact with the world around us and with other people. So we oftentimes confront situations in which we're not sure what to do, because the knowledge that we have going into this situation isn't adequate to handle the conflicting values that present themselves right now. And this could be, right, you think about it in a myriad of ways. It could be from what bracha do I make on this food, because I'm not sure now that they manufacture it in a new way. I'm not sure that this is the same food item that I used to eat. Or, you know, I'm attending a wedding and I'm not sure whether or not this particular person should be playing this role at this wedding based on their connection to the people who are getting married.
It's where the tire meets the road.
That's right. So these are all the time, these are happening. And so some of them are easier questions, and some of them are much more complicated. Some of them have, I would say, rather straightforward ramifications, whether I make a bracha or a hadama, bracha of hadama or a bracha of mizonos. The nafkamina is not going to be that much. It's the same granola bar. And even if I decided I wasn't going to eat the granola bar, it's not the world's biggest deal. But when you're talking about someone's life, the future of their life, or their Jewish identity, all kinds of questions, these questions are of paramount importance. And the question is, how do we resolve these questions? And the answer, of course, is that we present them to a posek, to a rav, to a mor ha-rav. But here's the thing that I want to think about this morning together with you, which is, how would we think like a posek? How would I approach a question if I were a posek? What is the methodology through which you're going to answer this difficult question? And many of us can think in our minds now of times that we've had to ask a shaila of various kinds. Did we ever wonder, well, what went into the rabbi's process? How did he come to the answer that he came to? Because most of the time when you ask a shaila, it doesn't become, all right, we're going to have a shiur now for an hour. It's, you have a question and the rabbi is going to give you an answer. But there is a way. There's not only one way. It's not one way on the highway, but there are ways, specific ways of thinking about questions and analyzing them and addressing them, both in general, like what's the methodology of thinking about questions, and then in specific questions. So what we're going to think about today is how to think like a posek. How would you think about a psak halacha? How would you think about a shaila if it were posed to you? Obviously, it's clear none of us, and I shouldn't speak to anybody else unless you're like a posek nistar, none of us in this room, myself included, qualify as poskim. Just clarifying. Yeah.
So over time, so there have been different methods.
Oh, good. Okay.
So do they come to different answers?
Good. So what Glenn is pointing out is that there is no one derech hapsak. There are definitely different strains of ways of approaching halachic questions. There have always been. You will notice those trends if you study Shilas and Tshuvas, which is the... Why don't you come closer so we don't have to go... I feel bad, you're in Gullus over there. There have always been different... If you study Shilas and Tshuvas, which is the rabbinic response literature, you will see different ways of analyzing. But I want to look at it specifically, and this is not the only way to look at it today, but this is one very important way to look at it today, and I'll explain to you why in a second. This is a way of looking at a halachic question today in the year 2019, which is different than if you would have received a question in the year, you know, 1819 or in the year 1319, because we're living in a different time and there's a lot more in front of us. So it starts, I guess, with my own personal experience, and I had an amazing gift that I have to share with you, my own personal experience, one of the many, many gifts that I received and continue to receive by being in Chicago. And that is that after several years, I marshaled the temerity and audacity to approach Maran Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz Shalita, she live and be well, Shavu Refuah Shleima. So you know he's a preeminent posig. So you also know that I have not too much shame. So I said to him after a certain point of being here, I said, Rebbe, you know, maybe would it be possible if I could just come to your office once a week and just sit there for what we call in the Olam HaTorah, we call Shimush. I don't have a good way of translating the word Shimush, but just getting an understanding of what a posek, you know, what a posek's worldview looks like. And he said, sure. I was like, really? He said, yes. So until, unfortunately, as you know, the last couple of years, he has not been well, but until the stroke right before it was about Shavuos time, a little over 2 years ago. So until that time, I had the opportunity and the once-in-a-lifetime gift to come to his office and to sit, and he would take notes usually during the week for just for his own, you know, keeping track of what was going on. So he would have questions that would come in from whether it was communities beyond Chicago, because many Rabbanim outside the New York area are part of the CRC, so they call Rav Schwartz with Shilas. And then, of course, the local Shilas, and then RCA, Beis Din Shilas that are, you know, very complex and far-reaching. And he would check them off and just tell me what he got in this particular Shila and how he was thinking about it and what his way of addressing it was. So this was, as you can imagine, such an incredible opportunity for a young person to have that kind of shimush. It's amazing. So one of the many, many things that I learned, not specific, of course, I took notes on these things, and I have a file with the different Piskei Halacha that he gave, but was a theme that kept coming up that I asked him about, which was a lot of times he would quote a very important posig, and this posig was known to me by name, but I was kind of surprised that he would mention him. And his name is Rav Ovadia Yosef, Zichrono Livracha. So he would quote Rav Ovadia in this tshuva and Rav Ovadia in that tshuva. And at a certain point, I asked him, I said, but Rav Ovadia is Sfardi. So he looked at me and said, no, you don't understand. He didn't say it like that, but that's that's what I took from it. You know, he said in much gentler. He said, just because he's Sfardic from the Sfardic tradition doesn't mean that his tshuvas are not very important for an Ashkenazi posig. Especially because in the vast majority of cases, Sfardim and Ashkenazim are going to paskin the same, you know, there's no gloss of the Ramon, a particular Shaila. In many cases there is, but in many, many cases there's no difference. But even beyond that, even when there is a difference, he says you have to learn Rav Ovadia's Sfarim. And because of that, I started learning Keseder, some of the Sfarim of Rav Ovadia, and it just totally opened my eyes. It was an unbelievable revelation. It's a whole world of Derech HaPsak, and this goes back to your point before. Is this the only way to Paskin a Shaila? No. You will find other Poskim have different ways of Paskin a Shaila, but this is, Rav Schwartz told me, and he demonstrated in the way that he thought about questions, that this is a very important way of thinking about how to paskin a shaila. And Rav Ovadia, as you probably know, I'll just give a brief biographical sketch if you want more. When he passed away, they had a series of hespedim. One of the other great gems, treasures here in Chicago is Rabbi Raka. Rabbi Raka was a direct Talmud for a long time of Rav Ovadia, and he was one of the maspedim. Rav Ovadia passed away. He has a tremendous knowledge of Rav Ovadia's Derech HaPsak. You know, I don't know anything from anything. I know a few tshuvas from a few svarim that I continue to learn, but, you know, you're talking about a real Talmud. You have to talk to Rabbi Raka, who quotes Rav Ovadia all the time. But Rav Ovadia was born in 1920 in Iraq. And this is important because in Iraq, there was a Rav a major posik, the Shalos Tshuvos Rav Pa'olam, the Ben Ish Chai. The Ben Ish Chai was the major posik in Baghdad. And Rav Ovadia was 4 years old when his family moved to Israel. His father was a smith. And then when he was in Israel, his father was a grocery man. He owned a little shop in Beis Yisrael. There's a legend, and I don't know how many of these legends, there are multiple books about Rav Ovadia. I don't know how many of these legends are true, but as we say about many legends, they don't say these about me and you. That his father was very poor, he was a Sephardic immigrant from Iraq, and he had a little grocery store. So at one point he needed help in the grocery store. Of course they couldn't hire anybody, they didn't have any money to hire anyone. So apparently little Ovadia Yosef was working in this grocery store. And the Rosh Hashiva of the yeshiva, Ketana, where Rav Ovadia was learning, came to the grocery store. And he said to Rav Ovadia's father, he said, I will be happy to volunteer my time to work in your grocery store so that he can learn in the yeshiva. Because what was apparent at a young age was that Rav Ovadia, and you read the Svarim of Rav Ovadia, you could tell that this is not a man of giant intellect. This is a man of nearly superhuman photographic intellect. Not talking about the content of the amount of Svarim that he has learned. The numbers of Svarim that he has learned and that he knows, and the tshuvas they're quoting, they are literally beyond exhaustive. Libraries and libraries of Svarim packed into tshuvas, just I and this tshuvas and that tshuvas, and you learn these tshuvas, you're like, I don't know, I never heard of the first one, or the second one, or the third one. And he knows them all, every single one. He was beyond genius. So at the age of 12, he went to study in Porat Yosef, which is a very prominent Sephardic yeshiva. At the age of 20, he received smicha from Rav Uziel, the Rav Rashi, the Sephardic Rav Rashi, both in Rabbanus and in Dayanus, to be a rabbinical judge at the age of 20. He was already giving shiurim. And his approach, which there's a Rav in Yerushalayim, Rav Ben Ilau, who wrote a whole doctorate while Rav Ovadia was still living, which is interesting. He wrote a whole book on Rav Ovadia's Derech HaPsak. One of Rav Ovadia's chief aims in life was Lahachzir Atara Liyoshna, to bring back the good old days, the glory days. And what did he mean by that? Number one, he meant the pride of Sephardic Jews, which is, of course, centuries-old, very prominent tradition. But he meant something specific, whereby when he was younger, there was a very strong influence of the Ben Ish Chai. But the Ben Ish Chai, his Derech HaPsak, was not always in line with Rav Yosef Karo. So for those who were here, a few weeks ago, we spoke about Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef, he was the author of the Shulchan Aruch and the posik for Sephardi Jews in Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Ovadia says, look, we're all coming back to Israel now. We have to follow, as the posik says, and Rav Ovadia, of course, he knew all of Tanakh by heart like he did every other Sefer. So he has a lot of pitgamim, expressions that come from Tanakh. What would Rav Ovadia say? He would say, Lechu el Yosef. Where is that from? Anybody know? Where does it say in Tanakh, in Sefer Bereishis, Lechu el Yosef? We all need to go to Yosef for something. Where does it say that?
When they didn't have any food.
Yes, yeah. When they had no food. Who was the one man with the key to all the food? Yosef. So Maran said, Lechu el Yosef. We are now in Israel. This is the future of the Jewish people. This is the Kibbutz Golios. This is the modern state of Israel. We need to follow the Shulchan Aruch, Lechu el Yosef. This is big. So if you'll notice, generally speaking, Rav Ovadia's tshuvas, if it says in the Shulchan Aruch, that's going to be very, very authoritative. Once in a long while, you'll find, and again, I can't say I've gone through all the tshuvas. I had the privilege of at least going through all the tshuvas in the Chavadas, because they're much shorter, so that's okay. But the Abi Omer I haven't gotten through yet. Shulchan Aruch is huge. So this is Rav Ovadia's bedrock. It's not only the exhaustive learning of all the books. There was a legend about when the Porat Yosef librarian, I forget how many thousands and thousands of books, they had received from someone in a Yerusha, in a, some kind of beneficent trust or something that fell to them, and the librarian couldn't figure out 11 books or 4 books, and they saw Rav Ovadia in the hallway. And they asked him, have you ever heard of these such and such a sefer? You know who the author was? The title page was ripped off, and they just passing in the hallway. The librarian himself knew thousands of books. He said, oh, it's this, that, and the other one. You can't measure. Yes?
I don't. You said something about how he was trying to get the Ben Ish Chai and
the Rav. I'll clarify. The Ben Ish Chai was in Baghdad.
Right.
He wrote many Sfarim. His approach was not exclusively or primarily relying on the Beis Yosef. And Rav Ovadia says the Ben Ish Chai was a very important Sephardic posek. But Rav Ovadia says, no, we have to take a different approach. Not always different than the Ben Ish Chai, but Rav Ovadia is saying is that we need to prioritize the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch was the Mara Da'aral Di Yisrael. He was, the, so to speak, the chief rabbi of Israel. Obviously, that's 400 years before. But he's saying, we want to establish Psak. We're living in Israel. We need to follow the Shulchan Aruch. Sephardim, and of course, if you want to convert to Sephardism for Rav Ovadia, he'll sign you up. No problem. Right? So you want to be Ashkenazi? I don't know. It's a different question. But if you want to be Sephardic, that's the real Lachzir HaTorah LeYoshnam. So in 1947, Rav Ovadia actually was said, he was asked to go to become a community rabbi in Cairo, which he did for 3 years, which some of his tshuvas, if you look in the Abi Omer, some of the tshuvas were written from when he was in Egypt, but it was not a great experience because, unfortunately, the community in general was not a very committed community. And so he didn't find that was a great Tzibuk HaNefesh, although he was, of course, teaching and writing and Paskening Shilas and he had a yeshiva, but he comes back to Israel and he sets up as a chaver of a bezdin in different places. One, there was a very, very important famous Rav in Petach Tikva who came from Europe. His name was Reb Reuven Katz. Reb Reuven Katz, I don't know when he died, but he had a son who when I was in YU, he was much, much senior of the Rosh Yeshiva. He must have been in his 90s when I was in YU. And so this Reb Reuven Katz was one of the great European Rabbanim. He came to Israel, settled in Petach Tikva, so Rav Ovadia joined his Besdin and others, until in 1968, he becomes the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv Yafo, parallel with an Ashkenazi man by the name of Rabbi Shlomo Gorin, who in 1973, both become... That's right, chief rabbi of Israel. Rav Ovadia serves until 1983, and then... Essentially, after that, devotes the rest of his life to building the Shas party, the Shas political party, and the Shas movement, which is Lachzir Atara Liyoshna, that the Sephardic community is tired of being Ashkenazed by a bunch of Ashkenazim who don't appreciate or respect or understand the whole tradition, the whole world, the cultural and Torah world that the Sephardim come from for hundreds and thousands of years. So Rav Ovadia says, what is this? You have schools for Ashkenazim, we have to have schools for Sephardic children. Now, one of the things which is, you know, a very unfortunate, it's hard for me to understand, I don't know where it comes from, but there still is, for some reason, in some way, there is still some stigma, there's still some, I hate to say, but it almost sounds racist.
Yeah.
It's a terrible thing, lo aleinu. It's hard to understand that B'nai Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we should look down at one person on another, but I don't understand it, mamish, I do not understand it at all. But Rav Ovadia says we have to have schools for Sephardic students, girls' schools and yeshivas, and there has to be political class. Sephardim have to stand up for themselves. This is kind of in the wake after the rise of Menachem Begin in the late 70s. So Rav Ovadia starts this party in 1984. And then Rav Ovadia dies in 2005 or 2007. Do you know how many people attended Rav Ovadia's Levaya? 800,000 people. I think it took 4 hours to take the Aron from a few blocks from the yeshiva to Sanhedrin. He's buried in Sanhedrin. 800,000 people. That's the level that you're talking about in terms of influence. It's beyond. So how would you, if you were Rav Ovadia, how would you think about a Shaila? And Rav Ovadia got some of the most complex and difficult, in addition to the just pedestrian, you know, when do I save a Saint Talmud Matar, questions about the status of Ethiopian Jews, the status of yibam and chalitza, questions of brain death, all types of questions. Some of the most difficult shilas. When the RCA Rabbanim here were faced with, you know, Rabbi Reese can tell us, I have a volume at home of this, when the RCA Rabbanim were faced with the Aguna Shilas after 9/11, which were very complex because Lo Aleinu, I don't want to say, but, you know, they didn't find bodies. They found pieces or evidence, DNA, like Lo Aleinu, you can't say Lo Aleinu. So they had to figure out how, they had, I think, 11 cases of Agunas. So the husband disappeared. The husband was working, whatever, on the 107th floor of the North Tower. And Lo Aleinu, there's nothing left except maybe some DNA that they could find. So they came up, Rabbi Reese could come and give a whole very interesting lecture. There's a book about this. I have some, the Hebrew articles are published in Kol Tzvi. So the Rav Schwartz and Rabbi Reese and Rabbi Willick and the RCA Besdin worked on a tshuva to be matir, to allow these agunas based on the information that they had from the coroner and from the airlines and from telephone records and text messages and all kinds of things. And they sent it to Rav Avadya. They sent it to Rav Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, and they sent it to Rav Avadya. It was maskim to the Heter Aguna, because Rav Avadya was Rav Avadya. If you're talking about a life and death question, the future of someone, a woman, that she should be allowed to be remarried, so they're going to send Rav Avadya, which is going to fit with the sheet of something mentioned here. So Rav Avadya does an incredible favor. He says, I'm going to give you a little window into my life as a posig, into my world, into what I think, both bechlal and befrat, when I address a question. And he does that by outlining it in the Hakdama to his major tshuvas. Rav Avadya authored two sets of tshuvas, which is what you have in the yellow packets and the pink packets. The yellow packet is what we're going to do first. This is the much more in-depth, expansive series of tshuvas, and they're referred to as Yabia Omer. Why is it called Yabia Omer? Any guesses? Ovadia Yosef Ben Yaakov. Where do you see that? That's right, the reverse of Yabia. So he calls it Yabia Omer, which is based on the Pasuk in Tehillim. We say it in the davening every Shabbos morning. It's a beautiful Mizmor Tehillim. This section is actually about the beauty of Torah, the illumination of Torah. Yom liyom Yabia Omer v'layla layla yachavadas. So it's Yabia Omer followed by yachavadas. The first volume of Yabia Omer was published in 1954. The first volume of yachavadas in 1977. There are, I think, 11 volumes of Yabia Omer. I think the 11th one was published posthumously, although it was put together. The first volume of Yabia Omer has ridiculous haskamas, approbations, Sephardic and Ashkenazic. When he was coming back, when he came back to Israel, he was learning under the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, that's Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, the author of the Shalos Tshuvas Har Tzvi, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, anybody, Rav Herzog, the chief rabbi, and Rav Ben Zion Meir Chai Uziel. This is the first order, the first rank, tshuvas of the first rank. If Rav Avadya is a tshuva on something, if you are a Mor Hora, how could you not look at Rav Avadya's tshuvas? He quotes everything and everything. Everything from you ever heard of and anything you ever thought you would ever hear of. So Rav Avadya says, I'm going to write a series of tshuvas. Each one is a practical question. Somebody wrote him a shaila. So, you know, we have a mikvah. Our mikvah has a crack in it. What should we do? So does Rav Avadya write back one line? So if you look at the history of responsa of tshuvas, there are different styles. So some tshuvas, they just give you a one-word answer. Yes, no, or do this, do that. Right? Just the bottom line. Rav Avadya, certainly in the Yabia Omer, is much more systematic, where he goes through the entire issue and he lays it out for you. Well, what is he thinking when he does that? How does he go about that? So he says, I have an introduction, I'm going to tell you. Now, so what we're going to do is turn open the yellow packet. You see it starts on page 17. All right, the letters are not the biggest you've ever seen. But we had to get a lot in a short amount of time. So what we're going to do is, We're going to start, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the lines, like the bingo game. We're on page 17. We're going to go by line on the first column, the second column. So you can get, this is... What was Martin Luther? How many points did he have? I forget. 70 points? 93 points. This is the 13 points. This is Rav Avadya's 13 points of how to be a posig. 13 points, how to be a posig. And each one is chock full of Mar Makomos. So I'm going to try to pick out one from each one just to get a sense. So Rav Avadya starts out, he says, listen, start from line number one on page number one, which is on this page, it's packeted 17. Aleph. He quotes the Yerushalmi in the beginning of the 18th parak in Shabbos on line number 2. Kol Torah she'ein la beis av, ain't a Torah. Ain't a Torah. It is not a Torah if you don't have a beis av. What does it mean literally, a beis av? What do those words mean? What's that? Yeah? That's right, a house of father. What do you think that sounds like? That's right. You have to have a Masorah. You have to have somewhere you came from. Your parents' house. So Rav Avadya says, what is this teaching us? He says, first thing, you cannot paskin without what came before you. Without the base of what was before. You can't just say, oh, this is what it sounds like. You got to start from the beginning. Where do you start from the beginning? You start always with the Mishnah and the Gemara. So if you go to line 19, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, quotes Gemara in Sanhedrin, b'miyata motzi melchamata shel Torah, b'mi sheyesh b'yodo chavilos shel Mishnah. You have to start with the Mishnayos. And what happens when you learn Mishnayos? You ever open up a Mishnayos and try to paskin a shiloh from a Mishnah? You should not do that. That's a criminal act. The Mishnayos, can you paskin... Can you speak about an authoritative? Can you speak authoritatively about a Shakespeare poem by reading the card that's in the insert of the playbill that has just the cliff notes of the act? Act one, act two, act three, act four. Can you give some? No. So the Mishnayos is just the checklist. The Mishnayos is filled out by the Gemara. So Rav Avadya says, the first thing we need to do, go back to line 13. V'lachein muteles cho v'kedosha aleinu lifnos tchila el. Line 14. El what? HaTalmud. So you want to pass in the Shiloh? Here's number one. First thing is, you got to know the Gemara. Because the Gemara is the amplification of the Mishnah. That's the totality of Torah Shebaal Peh. That's the first place to go. You want to be a posek? You can't just open a kitzur Shulchan Aruch. That's not a psak halacha. You got to first know the Gemara. That's number one. Number two, however, line 25, section Beis. Okay, point number one, Rav Avadya says, you got to go to the Gemara. But number two, line 25, says Rav Avadya, Mikol Makom, nonetheless, Af She'ikar V'yesod HaHalacha B'Talmud, even though the main foundation of Halacha is in the Gemara. However, Ein B'Kochenu Lohotzi Din Min HaGemara, B'lo Iyon B'Poskin Rishon V'Achronim. It is impossible to paskin a shaila without looking at the early and later commentaries on the Gemara. Now, what Rav Avadya is about to do, which is what he does in every paragraph and in every tshuva, as does every good lawyer, is that Rav Avadya presents a thesis, his case, and then he supports it. And because Rav Avadya has the mastery of literally 2,000 years of learning in one mind, he can pull from anywhere at any time. You know, it's difficult for me to understand what this means or to even compare different kinds of people because it's like if someone were to ask you, standing at the foot, I don't know how tall it is. I shouldn't say this because maybe after 10 years here, I should know. I'm not sure how many stories the John Hancock building is. I don't know. But if I stood at, I should probably, right? I should. 100 chance. You don't know?
No.
I don't understand.
The restaurant's on the 96th.
I thought we're in Chicago. Imagine. I know. That's why I was... Everybody knows the Willis Tower or the Sears Tower, whatever. Imagine you're standing at the bottom of the John Hancock building and somebody says, look up. So you look up and they say to you, okay, so now you go to the Sears Tower and they say, look up. So which one is taller? Can you compare them? It's like not shayach. So imagine, ask them something. Could you tell me, how great was the Rav Avadya? Well, how do you compare him to somebody else? I could just say, just from learning some of this and comparing it, let's say, to someone like the Rogachev Gaon, who we mentioned once in the past, Rav Meir Simcha Cohen of Dvinsk, that was the Meshech Chachma. He was the more Lithuanian Rav in Dvinsk. He had a counterpart who had long hair, was the Lubavitcher Chassid, was the genius, the giant of the generation. That was the Rogachev Gaon, Rav Yosef Rosen. So Rav Yosef Rosen, he writes tons and tons of pages and pages. Most of what he writes are just references, just sources. Yerushalmi, Tosefta, Tshuva, this, that, the other thing. It's a very different style from Rav Avadya, but it reminds me of just a genius of a mind that it's all there. So it's just, oh, if you're talking to somebody who's a genius, so all you need to say is, oh yeah, Yevamos Pei Beis, and Rashi Chulin Ayin Gimel, and Maharsha Brachos Pei Dalid, and that's how they talk. So Rav Avadya is much more expansive than, and he's into the tshuvas, but like, it's just mind-boggling. So Rav Avadya, what he does is, he will make his case, and then he will bring sources, he will marshal sources. So he's going to advance an argument. Of course you have to learn the Rishonim, and he brings arguments. So that's what the rest of this column is. So he starts with the Rimi Gash. The Rimi Gash was the Rebbe of the father of the Rambam. Very important Spanish Rishon. Has anybody lost yet, or we're still with it?
No.
No, okay, good. So he quotes from a Rimi Gash. On line 27, what do you say? He says, somebody who just looks, Mishaela, ma yomer adonenu beish, she'inu yotea derech halacha lo kriyasa v'lo pirusha, ela shera harbi mitshuvas ha-ga'onim, u'mishaino mevin ikar adin v'lo makor min ha-talmudim u'mutu lahoros. And he says, can you paskin from the Tshuvas just of the Gaonim. The Gaonim is the period after the close of the Talmud, after the Savoraim. He says, look, the truth is that if you paskin a shayla from the Tshuvas of Gaonim, that's better than somebody who looks in the Gemara and tries to paskin a shayla without looking at the Gaonim, who came later. He says, at least the Gaonim, they're going to summarize. So if you have some, he says, it's better not to do that. That's not really called paskening a shayla if you don't know the development from the Gemara. But he says, take one person who says, I read the Gemara, and maybe I read Rashi, because if you learn the Gemara without Rashi, that's like going to work without a pair of pants. And then somebody else who, they didn't read the Gemara, but at least they read the Gaonim, so Rav Avadya quotes from the Rimi Gash. Rimi Gash says, well, if you didn't know what the others, the later Rishonim said in terms of interpreting the Gemara, he said, then you have no shot. You have no shot. And he says, this is the second step. Step one, gotta know the Gemara. Step number two, you can't know the Gemara and then just stop and say, I'm gonna pass on a Shiloh from the Gemara, even though Ravina of Ravashi, the conclusion of the Talmud, is the end of an era. You can't argue on the Talmud. But how can you really understand the Talmud without knowing the Rashba and the Ramban and the Bali Atosus and the Rambam and the Ravid? So he says that's step number two. Okay, step number one is you got to know the Gemaras. Step number two is you got to know the commentaries. You got to know the Rishonim and the Acharonim. So if you go to the end, he comes with let's go to the end of this section B, he comes here with a statement in the name of the Vilna Gaon. Go four lines from the end. And they say for Maisa Rav and the She'iltos, Shekosov. He says, Ha'olam Omrim, the people say, Halomeid Poskim below Gemara. If you learn Poskim without learning the Gemara, who kid dagim below Pilpilin. It's like fish without pepper. No one likes fish without pepper. But then he says, V'rabbeinu ha-gra omer, and the gra says, kepilpilin below dagim. It's like pepper with no fish.
So really, you have to have an argument to step number three, right?
Meaning?
First of all, you have to learn the Gemara, then you have to learn the opinions, then you have to argue about it.
Well, we're going to get to it. Okay. That's the next step. Okay. So now you've got the Gemara, and you've got the Rishonim. So, how do you go from there? You know, you've learned all of it. What do you do now? So, Rav Avadya says, you have to be careful. What do you mean? He says, You have to recognize, you see we're in Gimel now on the second line. He says you have to be careful. Ein lahakel rosh kenegdam lismoch al hachra asenu min ha-talmud. You have to be careful. Because the Gemara says in Yuma, Tova tzipornam shal rishonam mikresam shal achronim. The Talmud already says that the fingernails of the earlier generations is better or are greater than the full abdomen of the later generations. So technically speaking, could Rav Ovadia argue on the Rishonim? Technically speaking, he could. But he says, we have to be careful. You have to recognize that these Rishonim, these early commentaries, were so overwhelming in their spiritual greatness and their knowledge and their understanding of the Gemara that you have to be very, very careful when you relate to what it says in the Rishonim. So he says, doesn't mean that you can never argue on them. He says, unless, line number 4 in section Gimel, El Im Kein Beraya Berura, unless you have an absolute, clear, unequivocal proof, Uvahaskamas Chachme Hador, and with the approbation of the sages of the generation, he says, Vizek Kashim Ma'od B'mitzius. That's very difficult. Once in a while, you'll find the Shagas Aryeh was one of the greatest rabbinic luminaries, the end of the 18th century, lived at the same time as the Vilna Gaon. He was at the last 20 years of his life, he was a Rav in Metz in eastern France or western Germany, whatever you're going to call it. And the Shagas Aryeh on occasion argues on the Rishonim, the Vilna Gaon sometimes argues on the Rishonim, but these are few and far between. They're not common. Rav Avadja says, you have to understand, and that's, I think, an expression of humility. You have to understand that the Rashba and the Raivat, these Rishonim, these are living 800 years ago, they knew so much more. And so Rav Avadja therefore says, in section 4, he says, I'm very unhappy, I have to tell you. He says, La'afuke, I am against what I see in some of the contemporary authors who, section 4, Dalid, Os Dalid, second line, She'asher lo yiru, or yiro, v'lo yechasu me'emas rabosein ha-rabishonim, that they don't have adequate reverence and trepidation. He says, I see people writing, and they don't relate to the Rishonim with sufficient trepidation. Editorial note here from Reuven Brand. I can't think of anybody who would not need to be in awe and trepidation of the Rishonim more than Rav Ovadia. He probably knew more than anyone else in the door. And yet, he's the one who's saying, no. Kavod Gadol. And by the way, Rav Ovadia knew exactly how much he knew. He was not shy about being very firm in his opinions, and sometimes it was controversial. Like his psak, Rav Avadya Paskin, that the Ethiopian Jews were completely Jews and did not even require conversion, l'chumra. And that was opposed by many other rabbanim, and that's a very big controversy. Rav Avadya says, these are the sources, this is what he says, that's what he says. So, but Rav Avadya says, when it comes to the Rishonim, he says, you have to be careful. And he says, to write about them like somebody would write about their friend. And look what he writes in the fourth line in the parentheses. He says, how do you write about Rishonim? What does it say there in the parentheses? Bedor chofesh hadibur. He says, today, freedom of expression. So people write what they write. He says, no, not about the Rishonim. You can't write like that. So now let's flip the whole packet over. What's that? So point number 1 was you got to learn the Gemara. Point number 2 is you can't go without the Rishonim. Point number 3 is that you have to be very hesitant before you argue on the Rishonim. Point number 4 is have some humility. Have some humility. Yes.
You're making the Rishonim sound like they're one entity. They disagreed a lot too, didn't they?
Yes.
So then aren't some of the Acharonim just trying to talk about the differences?
Exactly. So that's what he's going to get to later in terms of intra-generational differences of opinion versus someone in the 19th century arguing with somebody in the 13th century. So the Rambam and the Ravid, they argued with each other. The Ramban and the Balamor, they argued with each other. But for you to argue on the Balamor, you're not the Ravid. So that's point number 4 is have some humility. Let's go to point number 5. He says, therefore, we have to figure out how you're going to learn. What's the way to learn? So now, Rav Avadya.
Wait, so where are we?
We're now on page, go turn over the packet, 18, section, point number 5. What is the way to Paskin Ashayla? So Rav Avadya says, now that you've learned all this, how do you learn? Hine darkei hora unasivoseha. The path of teaching and its ways. And of course, in addition to what it says explicitly in the Shas, because things come up like in vitro fertilization, which do not appear anywhere in the Talmud. Al yedei hahekesh vehigayon habarur, line 30. Ledamos milsa lemilsa. Through clarity of comparing one issue to another issue, can you compare, you know, this reproductive shiloh to something that appears already in the sources? Al pi hamido shator nedreshes men v'klolei hagemara v'aposkim. He says you take straight logic and you try to appear to try to compare and put things together. What is he not in favor of? He's not in favor of what we would call pilpul. What is pilpul? Pilpul are more of a mental gymnastics type of, here's a sharp question with a sharp answer and another question and another sharp answer. He says, that's not the way to Paskin Ashayla. He says, that's not straightforward, simple analysis. That's standing on your head. Rav Avadya says, that's not going to help you. And therefore, once we understand that, Rav Avadya now makes the next point in point number 6 in Vav. Umichlolan shel dvarim, you learn kichova kedosha mitzah gdola Yisrael v'rashi yeshivos. The heads of the educational institutions should teach their talmidim lahadrech eslomdei hayeshivos. Line number 5 now in section 4, in section 6. Six bahadracha matima v'hashgacha yisera, so that they should learn lahavenu lahoros based on the Gemara in Kiddushin gadol talmud shemevi lidei maisa. You have a yeshiva? Make sure that your boys know how to learn and answer the conclusion of the sugya according to what the halacha is. If all they know how to do is to ask on this and then to ask back and then to ask another question and another answer and another question and another answer and another question and another answer and then they finish, he says, what's the main goal of learning? This is his knech here, is gadol talmud, the main goal of learning. It's great. Shemevi lidei maisa. Well, if you finish learning and you don't know what the answer is, you learn all of Masechus brachos, excuse me, but you don't know what bracha to make on cereal, Rav Avadya would say, you came up short. So he is needling now many of the Ashkenazi yeshivas where there's a tremendous focus on eon and analysis and shakla vataria and pilpul back and forth. Rav Avadya says, but what about just a straight, simple score. What's the psak? What's the answer?
So is he saying that instead of all this pilpul sharp things like Brister type of stuff, is he saying you should go by what Rabbi Shmuel says? He says, Api Hamida Shatar Nidreshes Behen? What you just said?
Meaning, what he means by that is he doesn't mean the original Midas Shatar Nidreshes Behen. He means the standard traditional way of analyzing a question and paskening it based on that. So what does the Rambam say? What does the Rabbeinu Tam say? Comparing the two opinions, putting the, you know, the cheshbon together. Now, one important point here, and Rav Avadya is not known for this, but Rav Schwartz told me, he said, you have to be careful. People say, oh, Rav Avadya doesn't have any lumdus. Rav Avadya just piles up opinions, and then he says, oh, whichever is bigger. Rav Schwartz said that's absolutely not true, and it's clear when you learn Rav Avadya's Tshuvas, that's not true. Rav Avadya has an absolutely masterful grasp on the conceptual foundation of a Shaila, but that's not going to be the main focus of his discussion, back and forth, and asking and answering and asking and answering. He's going to give you the basic underpinning of what the conceptual framework of this Shaila is, and you can glean that from what he's saying. But that's not the focus, and so therefore that's not the frame. It's not, well, what is the conceptual framework of Geirus, if we're going to deal with the Ethiopians. But obviously that is part and parcel of how to answer that Shaila. So yes, Rav Avadya of course values Lumdus. And there is a great value in understanding, well, why is the Rambam arguing with the Ravid? And depending on why they're arguing, maybe you can bring a proof from a different Rishon or from a different Sugya. But if it's all about the back and forth, then you're not getting halacha l'maisa. And Rav Avadya says that is what is crucial. And he mentions it 2 times in this Hakdama. The Gemara says, so go to page 19 now. where he then gets to, you'll see, he's turning over, starting on 19. He says, we have a machlokas in the Gemara. Based on this, that we want to get lasuki shmait alibi dehilchasa, which is greater, Sinai or Oker Harim? What do the words Sinai and Oker Harim mean? What do you think they mean?
Maybe Sinai is like straight halacha,
okay.
And Oker Harim is like all the pilpul.
Okay, you're getting there. Good.
Yeah.
What do we get at Sinai? Okay, we got Torah Shabbatah. We also got Torah Shabbatah, but we got a lot of information. You came, you got a ton, you got a download, Kivyachol. So the Gemara says in Horios, you have two personalities, two chachamim. One is a Sinai personality. They have tremendous knowledge, but they're not so analytically inclined. Then you have somebody else who's Oker Harim, who is grinding up the mountains, because he could ask and answer, and he's super sharp. You know, you get in conversation with people like that. They could take it back and forth and back and forth. So which is greater? Hai minayu adif. So the Gemara says, you know which is greater? What do you think Rav Avadya is going to say?
Sinai
is greater. Why? Because the Gemara says, at the end of the day, you could be as sharp as you want. But the Gemara says, hakol boi lamori chitya. I think that's the expression. Everybody needs, at the end of the day, the guy who sells the wheat. Everybody needs the baker. You could be a great artisan baker, but if you don't have any wheat, what are you going to do? You need the sources. You need the yedios. You need the Sinai. So says Rav Avadya, I'm not saying Oker Harim has no place. I'm just telling you that when it comes down to it, if you have to prioritize, when you're thinking about how am I going to create a posek, I have to think about Sinai first, making sure that there's enough knowledge. And that's why in Zion, he quotes a comment from Shlomo Kluger, who challenges the question of whether or not even today Sinai is preferable over Oker Harim, and he says yes. Even so. So let's go now to point number 8, which is going to turn the page over to number 20. Here again, Rav Avadya goes back to the similar argument. And this is important, of course, for us when we're thinking about how does a posek think? He says a posek doesn't think based on pilpul. So he tells a story here in the Shiles of Tshuva's Degel Ruvain in the name of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. I don't know who the Degel Ruvain was. So look on line, I'm on number 20, line number 13. Comes to Rav Chaim Volozhiner. That a rabbi came to Rav Chaim Volozhiner with a shaila to ask Rav Chaim Volozhiner's opinion. He says, "V'hitzia lo psak din lahatir aguna." He was going to allow an aguna. How? Al pi yisod kushyaso betosis yavamos. He had a kasha and a tosis and yavamos, and based on that kasha, he's going to build a whole logic to allow this woman to remarry. So you know what Rav Chaim Volozhiner answered him? Ano Hagaon line 15, Mikushya lo mesim. You don't know, as they say in Yiddish, there's a Yiddish expression in the world of yeshivas, they say, Fenakasha starbnisht. You don't die from a question. So Rav says, you know what he meant by that? You can't go and practically rule on somebody because you have a kasha on Tosfos. You have a kasha on Tosfos, go back to the base medrash to see maybe there's a marasha, maybe there's some a marashal. Somebody's going to deal with that. But that's not how you paskin a shaila, Rav Chaim Volozhiner says. You paskin a shaila from the systematic development of the halacha. You have pilpul, pilpul is good. But that's not how you paskin halacha. And therefore, Rav Avadya says in section tests, in number 9, he says, you know how you have to prioritize? You got to learn things that are lamaisa, which is a balance. We once had the opportunity, I'm running late already, always running late. We had the amazing gift when Chama and I were first married that we were living in Yerushalayim in the Grus Kolel. She was working in a microscope company and I was learning in the Kolel. And at that time, Rav Lichtenstein, Zeichet Tzadok V'Kadosh Levracha, was still giving shiurim in Hebrew. At that time, he was giving the shiurim in Hebrew. And so once in a while, we had opportunities to ask him questions. So I once asked him about how to balance learning pilpul, learning iyun, and learning halacha. So he said to me something interesting, which I think applies to this piece in Rav Avadia. Rav Lichtenstein said to me, he said, you have to learn halacha, but he said that the learning of iyun, he said, it's like a mayan hamiskaber. What is a mayan? A spring. It keeps the water fresh. It's active. It moves. So what in the life of a posig, in learning, and what we do, for example, in the kolel, we spend some of our time developing our analytical skills, our pilpul, our understanding, our insight, our mayan hanoveya, and then we also develop our knowledge of halacha. So these two are complementary. They're not conflicting, but sometimes they're competing for time. And Rav Avadia says, first thing we got to do is make sure that we know all the halachas of Or HaChaim. And he makes fun, Rav Avadia says. He makes fun. He makes fun of someone who's a Talmud Chacham, a great baki in we're learning this year, Temura. He's an expert in Hilchos Temura, but he doesn't know how to observe Hilchos Shabbos. Rav Avadia says, that's ridiculous. Imagine somebody who's a big Talmud Chacham who doesn't know the laws of Shabbos because he's so busy learning pilpul. Rav Avadia says, you have to learn halacha l'maisa. Okay? So far Rav Avadia has gotten us from the Gemara to the Rishonim to learning the early Achronim. We've got that down. We're going to study it in the methodological approach of focusing on the halacha. But what about today? Today, we're not just looking at, you know, the Gemara and the Rishonim. We also have other svarim, achronim, later poskim. How do we relate to those? How should a posik relate to the other svarim that are contemporaneously written? So Rav Avadia says, I'll tell you. Look at section 10. Yud. V'hine harotze lizkos l'chavin lamita shel Torah. You really want to reach the truth of Torah? L'horos halacha l'maisa? Bevadai, certainly sha'olav l'chapes heiti b'sifra achronim v'achronim achronim. You have to learn and study the contemporary authorities. It's not enough to just say, I'm just going to look at what the Rishonim says. That's it. So why? Turn the page. He says, how do we learn? We learn from interacting with others and hearing their perspectives. I'm going to look in a sefer, says Rav Avadia, and it turns out they'll bring up an argument I didn't think of. But not only that, if you go down to line 43, where he quotes from the Rav Pa'olim, he says, you know what the Gemara says? A person says, Harbe lamadati me rabosai, I learned a lot from my teachers. But who did I learn the most from? Right, mi talmida yoser mikulam. So says Rav Avadia, v'tamid, line 44, v'tamid timtza shagdolim tzrichim lektanim. You even need to learn svarim of mechabrim, of authors who are not of as great stature as you are. I'm sure there were many svarim that Rav Avadia learned whose authors were not nearly as great as he was. But he says, by learning those svarim, I have a different perspective. I have a new, enriched way of analyzing this issue. I'm sure it's true in the medical literature also. You have to learn all the articles that are about any particular issue, even it might not be the greatest gon, but otherwise, you don't know what the new thinking is, what other people's perspectives are. So Rav Avadia says, now it's easy for Rav Avadia, because if you have a photographic memory, so it just takes you 10 minutes, and you learn the Rebbe Sefer, so some of us, we don't have that gift. But he says, you have to not only lurk in the early poskim. This is Rav Avadia's methodology. That so when he is going to answer your Shaila, he's going to go through the encyclopedia of anything that was ever written on this topic. In Yud Aleph, he says, certainly in Dine Momenos, because in Dine Momenos, in point number 11, you actually, let's say you go to Beis Din with somebody, and the Beis Din rules in favor of the other person. But the din is, if there are two people, two poskim, reputable poskim, who take a minority view, if you're the muchzik of the money, you could say, I'm glad you paskin in that way. I'm going to follow those two people. I'm going to keep my money. And the Bezdin has to respect that. So Rav Avadia says, well, the Bezdin has to know all the opinions. How could it be? It's not on your watch to figure out all the opinions. You're the litigant. So the Bezdin has to know. He says, for sure, Dina Momentus, you have to know everyone's opinion out there. So you have to know everything. Flip the packet over. Last piece. Point number 12, and this goes back to what Glenn said before. 12 and 13. He says, well, what about, how do we relate to these svarim? He says, Rav Avadya, okay, now it's different. If you're talking about another sefer in the Achronim, that you can argue with no problem. You come up with a sefer in the Achronim, somebody in the last 100 years, or for Rav Avadya, maybe it was a tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, contemporary. That's not a problem to argue. Arguing on Rav Moshe Feinstein for Rav Avadya is not the same thing as arguing on the Rambam. So he says, there are people who say you can't argue on the Achronim. He says, that's baloney. And this goes back to what you said before. And someone else said, always there have been arguments. The Rishonim argue with each other all the time. The Gemara, they argue with each other all the time. So he says, today also, there's no such thing as saying, well, since Rav Moshe Paskin, nobody can argue on that. That's not true. There are always different opinions. If you're Higiel O'Ra, you have that right. I'm not Higiel O'Ra. I can't argue on Rav Moshe, but somebody who is a Higiel O'Ra can. However, where does Rav Avadya conclude? You go to the last page, point number 13. Yes, you can argue on other Achronim, but you should speak with Derech Eretz. Speak with Derech Eretz. Says you have to watch your mouth. So he says, even though be'emes sha'af al pi, even though shehurshenu, we are permitted. On the last page, point 13. Even though we are permitted lachlok al divrei poskim achronim, to argue on the poskim, kishyesh lanu raios nechonos, we have good proofs. Vachros miusados al adne paz, firmly rooted arguments. Mikomakom tzrichen lishlot beruchenu uladaber ba'anava tahora becherdas kodesh ubachna yisera. Speak with Derech Eretz. Doesn't mean you have to agree, but Derech Eretz you should have. So this is how a posek thinks. You start with the Gemara, you go through the Rishonim, you analyze all the sources in the Achronim, your orientation is to learn the Sugya Alib de Hilchasa, you know everything that's out there, you come up with the strongest rooted arguments based on the proofs that you have, and then you apply them. So now in the last 2 minutes, we come to Yechavadas. Because what is Yechavadas? So Rav Avadya says, we're not going to do it inside, I'm going to summarize it for you, that now, once we have this methodology, we can apply it across the board, especially to things that are pertinent to the day-to-day lives. So Rav Avadya had a radio program called Pinas HaHalacha. So on the radio, on every Friday, they had a program called Kabbalah Shabbos on the radio, and only with the great gift of the modern state of Israel can you have a radio program on Erev Shabbos called Kabbalah Shabbos with Divrei Torah Psak. People would write into Rav Avadya Shilas. So every week on the radio, Rav Avadya would have a different Shilas. So he says, look, people asked me, they said, these are such interesting things, and these Shilas are predominantly in Orach Chaim, daily living. What about Shabbos and Sfiras HaOmer and Pesach and this kind of matzah and that thing? Because these are things people want to hear about. So he's broadcasting this on the radio. So finally, he says, thank God, people like this, and people are telling me that I should write it down. So he does. So he writes it down. But where is his focus in this radio show? Think about it from his whole orientation. What kind of tshuvas is he dealing with? He's dealing with practical questions. He's not dealing with stam pilpulim. People want to know, can they make a wedding during this part of the year? They want to know, how do they observe Yom HaTzimut when it falls out like this? Like, these are just the things people want to know. So Rav Avadya is going to take all of encyclopedic knowledge and put it into two little pages in these tiny little tshuvas. I'll give you a little bit. Some of these tshuvas are parallel to ones in Yabia Omer that are mammoth, man-eating tshuvas. And here, the little bite-sized tshuvas. And so you know what he does in these tshuvas? He says some of these sources are in complicated language. Some of them are either in Aramaic or Rabbinic Hebrew. I'm just going to make it simple, regular modern Hebrew. I'm going to translate it for you. And I'm going to do this so that it's something which is what he calls shav lechol nefesh. And I'm going to do this, and the last line here, he says, terech kitzara, in a kitzerdik way, in a short way. And he concludes with a personal note that I call this Yechavadas to continue the pasuk of Yom Liom Yabia Omer, in addition to the fact that Yechavadas, only he would know this, is Begematria Ovadia Yosef Ben Yaakov, and it has 91 tshuvas in this volume, which is the name Ovadia. And he thanks his children who helped, his son who helped him, and he thanks his wife, and he prays to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Hashem should help him. But this is the way you get from here to here. You get to a simple question with a simple answer through this clear methodology that Rav Avadya has. So when you go through each tshuva on Yechavadas, you have a plain Poshit questions. Somebody in this room has had a question, probably every question that Rav Avadya has in Yechav Adas, I think it's 8 volumes or 9 volumes. These are questions that you've had. And when you go through it, it's a very simple formula, and you'll see through the tshuvas that that's how it goes. He starts with the Gemara, then he summarizes the Rishonim, then he quotes all the pertinent Achronim, and he says, you see, this is what the majority opinion is, this is why they say it, and that's why this is what we're going to rule in this particular case. So the conclusion, I hope, today is that we can further appreciate the process and how our poskim, our Masorah, certainly the Masorah of Rav Avadya, is able to take an entire history of learning and apply it to everyday questions in our lives. Thanks for coming. Have a great week.